Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as always, it's Dan. How are you doing this evening, Dan?
I'm doing well. I'm more awake than I was 20 minutes ago, thankfully, because I'm starting to drift. So hopefully I can keep it up for a little while.
That's what she said.
yeah, story of my life.
I'm going to refrain from going where I was about to be way too much information about myself there. So,
Tell me about it in person next week.
Yes, I am sure. Yeah, I do have a story. I do have a story relating to that. I will tell you next time. Quite the opposite situation. Anyway, people are not here to hear things like that. People are here to hear us talk about the latest episode of Legion. We're running a couple days behind here. But fortunately, we've got time tonight, and also fortunately, an episode that is, as I was just saying, they had such a straightforward episode the previous week, and they kind of doubled down with this one. So, I don't really have anything to say about last week's episode. Maybe I haven't given it enough thought because we were doing so many other podcasts this week, so... unless, surprisingly, you have something to say about last week's episode, which I'm going to assume no, correct? You don't have anything to say about last week's
episode. Correct.
Correct. Then let's just move on right to Legion, Chapter 12. Now, with this latest episode of Legion, we do recall last week, the bulk of the episode was David going into the minds of... First, Tonami, and then Melanie, and we ended the episode with presumably him entering the mind of Sid. And that's pretty much where we spent practically the entire episode. I'm going to say right now, I think this is maybe one of the best episodes of the season. It's definitely the best episode of the season so far.
Yeah.
And probably, I think it deserves to be ranked among the best episodes of the series. I mean, I think it's right there with some of the ones from last season. And for a very different reason than we're accustomed to discussing when we talk about Legion.
Yeah, it was kind of like the rare thing where, like, I'd say it's like a really good episode, but it seems like it's going to be hard to find stuff to talk about. So I guess we'll see how that ends up shaking out over the next 30 to 90 minutes.
I would have no problem if we end up knocking out a 15-minute podcast or a 50-minute one or five. Well, no, I would have a problem with a 500-minute one.
Wait till episode 300 and we can get Jack back and see how many. How long we.
Well, that would be the one we'll spend an entire weekend recording. But back to this. So. Yeah, this is the filler that we pave into here to fill this episode out, which I don't think we need to do because we're talking about a great episode here. What really, I mean, putting aside all the details and the visuals and whatnot about the episode, which we will obviously talk about a bit here, this was an episode that was about character, and this for me, and I think most viewers as well. This episode succeeded at something that I kind of thought that maybe the previous episode dropped the ball a little bit on, or had the potential to do, and just didn't quite pull it off the way I think they should have. Whereas I don't think we learned very much that we didn't kind of already know and feel anything more about the characters Tonami or Melanie last week. Even though there were any number of details in Sid's background that we had already heard about, especially the situation with her mother and her mother's boyfriend, because she had told that story last season. We got such a rich and sad and interesting backstory to her, and a lot of character building with her, and also relationship building, so we end up in a place where there's even a better understanding between them and of the relationship between David and Sid. This was a real character-driven episode. And probably, it's certainly one of the more emotionally resonant ones, I guess, because they're, I mean, our jaws usually drop open just because things are just like, holy crap, that was amazing or shocking, whatever. This, it's just, I mean, there's so much pain in this episode when you realize the life that Sid's had, which even if we didn't know about the story about her mother and the boyfriend, one could have guessed that just based on Sid's abilities, which truly can, I can, one could see could be more like a curse than probably any of the other characters on this show.
Yeah.
But it was really something to see it play out, literally from birth all the way through her teens. So, and by the way, and well cast.
Yeah.
I really liked the casting for all the Sid's life stuff. I mean, obviously, I recognize the actress who was playing her mother. I think her name is Lily. I want to say Rabe or Robbie. I'm not really sure how to pronounce her last name because, you know, I don't know how to pronounce names.
The one from American Horror Story,
Yeah,
yeah.
she's from. That's what that.
I was wondering where I recognized her from.
It's a we had like the FX connection there, I guess.
Yeah, nice.
Because the good thing is, because when part of it started, I was trying to figure out when I couldn't quite see her. And then I was like, wait, is this is Sid's backstory, right? I can't tell. Because from a certain angle, when you couldn't quite see her face, there was kind of a resemblance there. And then when I saw it, I was like, oh no, I recognize her. And my first
Yeah.
thought, that's American Horror Story girl. And then when I read about the episode, I was like, oh, Lily Rabe, okay. But well cast, because she looks plausibly like she could be like her mom. So I was always like
Oh yeah.
when they make casting like that. The same with some of the, especially one of the kids who plays her at a younger age. I could kind of, although no one's going to transform that much from 1 year to the next, at least it was in the ballpark. Like, okay, I could see casting
Yeah.
some of these people. But it's
Yeah,
more.
we're blessed. We're blessed with a lot of the shows that we watch have just, really good casting. Other than all the shitty Bobby Drapers, we tend to be pretty lucky.
Oh, I did we ever make a decision? I think we liked, didn't we kind of like the last Bobby Draper?
I know it was hard after he gave the sandwich away.
Oh, I had no problem with that. Come on, the Planet of the Apes scene.
Yeah.
Come on, that alone makes up for all the other ones. When he goes, geez, come on, that's cool. Anyway, so what's interesting about this episode, well, not what's interesting, because there's a lot of things that are interesting about this episode. The setup of this episode is the assumption that, much like Tonami and Melanie, now this is Sid's mental prison that has happened as a result of the affliction that the mad monk was passing around in the previous episode. Now, here's where I'm not sure. I think it starts out that way. I mean, it does, because he finds her, she's got the chattering teeth and everything. But as we learn later in the episode, even when everyone else has come out of that affliction due to the man being dead, I guess, she still keeps it going. It's really, I think it's really become Sid's. She keeps him in there until David can crack the puzzle that I was actually surprised by how many times we went through it. At a certain point, I thought, oh, it's gonna be the rule of three.
Yeah.
No, rule of four. No, rule of five. This is like, oh wait,
Well,
wait,
yeah.
six acts, rule of six. You know, I don't
Yeah,
know.
it was almost another time loop episode of since, yeah, I mean.
That's, yeah, we were just talking about something like that on another podcast. Oh, when we were talking about a show that we watched, Legends of Tomorrow, that they had an episode like that, and we were with the whole time loop repeating over and over, and then we were likening it to a Star Trek episode. And that's really something a lot, not a lot, but several TV shows have done over the years, especially shows that have any sort of fantasy or sci-fi element are the ones that can usually get away with it.
X-Files, I'm sure plenty of others.
Yeah, oh right, the X-Files, of course. I mean, it's kind of like, I remember, ouch, I remember at one point in time there used to be a habit of, well, every interesting show has to have their own Rashomon style episode, And now it's like every TV show has to have their, oh, they're trapped in a time loop kind of an episode, and we're gonna go through this again. It's the people call it the Groundhog Day episode or whatever. But this was interesting because, and I said it again. Damn, it's like that's one of my bad words I gotta stop using. What I found intriguing about this is, although there are certain key points that we keep going to when we keep running through the Sid's childhood story, we also get new stuff each time as well. We're not, which I like that. We weren't simply confined to like the same three, four, five, scenes or sequences repeat. I mean, we would go back to them. We might go back to them, from a different perspective or whatever. But we'd also get other parts as well, and which I'm glad he kind of decided to tell the story that way, because it also gives the impression that if David's going through this with her, that he's not experiencing all this just in a couple minutes. He's seen all these things already. We're just not going along with him on that ride. So you can imagine he's probably been going running this maze, which turns out to not be a maze actually, possibly for hours and hours, not just like minutes and minutes. So what were you when especially during the first act or two, I think the first. Because we stay in Sid's head, so to speak, for the entire first half hour of the show before we get any peek outside of that. So, was there anything during that first half hour that really struck you, or that was, were you getting in any way impatient, or were you just, or were you enjoying it more the further it was going along?
I found it really interesting the way they were telling the story in like a, I don't know, a non-traditional format. I mean, not the time loop thing, but for example, like the first time we see David is when they're having like a dinner party at her mom's house or whatever, and he's just kind of standing there, in a group of people watching what's going on, but they don't like draw any attention to David necessarily. So it's just he's part of the scene. But I mean, the camera doesn't focus on him or anything, so it's just we see him there, but it doesn't really seem to matter, which I found to be kind of just not something I'm used to at all. So I thought that really piqued my interest, and then from that point on, the rest of the episode, I'm just like, okay, what the heck's going on here? Like, what, David's watching this? What? And then, I mean, it didn't take long to figure out what was going on, but that really helped sell the whole thing for me.
I think when we go through it the first time, and wait, yeah, and you're absolutely right. Just where they just kind of drop David. We just see David like almost briefly at that dinner party, and it's one of those things. If you happen to look away from the TV for a moment, you might not have even noticed, and you would
Right.
have been like, well, "Where's David all this time?" But what I liked about that, because obviously as it goes further, David is our who we're following throughout this maze of Sid's life or whatever. It's giving us the opportunity just to experience Sid's childhood and little things about her, and the it cl although there's a certain amount of although there's a tragic nature to it because we know about Sid's powers or abilities, we're seeing things that have more po there's more poignancy in the first act as far as those things are concerned, or at least the first run through, I should say. So I think the first act continues, it gets a little bit the second time around we start seeing the worst things, because all the things we're seeing in the first act and that first I'm sorry the first time through, we see her like that's the moment where when she sees people kissing, then she practices kissing in the mirror, and there's something it's something a lot of like pre-teenage girls probably do as well, except her reasoning for why she's doing it is a little different than any other girls or something. Or
The first version like that we saw, it was definitely pretty idealized, and kind of like thing where like we tend sometimes, depending on the person, we can be the heroes of our own story, and we like remember things where like like maybe somebody else is a bad guy, and then the more you think about it, the more like the more the cracks start to unravel and that kind of thing. And that's kind of how I thought like this trip down memory lane, which it wasn't necessarily a trip down memory lane, but sort of how kind of went like the more they dug into it, the more the more darkness started to creep in, and
Right. Well, it's not until we get towards the later part of it that any kind of darkness even creeps into this. I mean, you go from the kind of cute idea of her putting on all the people's clothes when they left all their like their coats on the bed during the dinner party, and in a way that's like, oh look, it's kind of her way of transforming into all these other people and taking on their identities, just but she's just playing as kids do. And then it's from the moment where that, I think when that one woman touches her, that she freaks out. That's kind of like the one, that's like the first jarring moment, because a baby crying and doing all that stuff isn't jarring,
No.
and then I think we go from there. I think we skip right to her going through her punk phase, and then that weird that the culminating in that when she's at the dance club and she's come. I mean, she's borderline moshing, with everybody. And even though, and I think there, this is, remember I've talked before about when they do visual stuff on the show, you have to decide, is that literally happening, or are they just doing that just to visually tell us something, but it's not actually happening? The thing with her face changing, how it kept distorting and changing and becoming a couple of other people's faces that she was maybe brushing against or touching. I don't think that was actually happening. I think that was, my impression is that was kind of a way of telling us what was happening inside her. But I don't think that if someone was looking at her on the dance floor, they would see this her weird face getting all distorted. I don't think that was literally happening. That's the way I took it.
Well, yeah, that kind of thing doesn't happen with her power.
Yeah,
So, yeah, I agree. It
that's pretty
was
much why.
symbolic thing. Yeah.
And another thing I was kind of enjoying throughout this episode, I mean, this Noah Hawley, we know, does a nice job with, and whoever does it in conjunction with him as well, the selection of music for his shows. I mean, we've always liked the music they've used in Fargo, of course, and they've done a really good job on this show. I think the music is very integral to this episode. As far as the tone and where we are in her life and her attitude, when we like there's this Bon Iver song that starts off the episode, which has a certain it there's a certain sweetness to it, even though there's an occasional jarring quality to it. But for the most part, it's very pleasant, which is kind of reflects the story we're being told. And I think as we move on, we hear other things that kind of are more reflective of whatever's going on, where we are in Sid's life. And I know, and you've told me in previous podcasts, how Noah Hawley himself does some of the music, and
Right.
I believe on he does two different covers in this episode. I know he does Burning Down the House to end the episode, and he does another song during the episode, which, oh, it might be
It was
White Room? Was it White Room?
yeah, yep.
Okay. I did not, yeah. Other than scribbles in a book, I didn't write any of that down, so that was purely memory here. Yeah, and even the little moments like when she's looking at the fish in the bowl, I thought that was like a nice little telling us all about her. In an image kind of a thing,
Right.
because that in a way she's a girl who almost has to live her life in a bubble as well, even if it's not simply a matter of just putting on gloves, it's the way she has to live her life. Now here's the thing. So we run through it over and over, and that's when we start, and that's when as we go through the story we start seeing a bit more of the darker stuff. And because she wants him to watch more closely, she's trying to show David all the bad stuff. And he keeps coming up with reasons why he thinks this has all happened, why he's, and she keeps telling him he's wrong, try again, watch it again, watch it again. Which is initially funny, but you can see how annoyed, and I love how
Huh.
frustrated David is, because
Yeah.
there's something so comical yet really true about that. You can see he's getting so exasperated.
Yeah, he's just so damn earnest, especially in the first few, and then, I mean, the way she just shoots him down in the most cool, emotionless way. It was interesting to watch.
Yeah, it was, yeah, I was kind of enjoying how she, acted as though she had no idea who he was at first, and then you realize as you're watching it, it's like, oh, she knew who he was. She was just taking her detached quality just to an extreme there, and then she would ease off it as it went on, because by the time we get to the end, it's them talking about their relationship and whatnot. And I mean, as you know, and anyone who's listened to any of our podcasts, I have a massive crush on this character slash actress, so I wouldn't mind spending like 3 episodes in her mind if we had to. I'm cool with that. I was really just struck by all the interesting little visual details on top of the character stuff, and like the fire in the igloo is not a fire at all,
I know. That's pretty sweet.
and it was. I was thinking about that because I didn't notice that. From the get-go, I think I noticed it the second time we were in the igloo. And I was like, oh, wait, that's not a fire. And I was looking at it and I was like, you know what? That's the kind of thing that you would do on stage. Like if you're doing a stage production and you wanted to have, today, to have like a little special effect on stage, like a campfire or something, they would do that as opposed to having an actual fire on stage, which would be a hazard. And that makes perfect sense to me because what we were doing. We are watching a production of her life. It's like a little it's like a play being portrayed, being presented for David. Here I am, warts and all. Here's all the bad things that have happened to me, or the bad things more that I have done. And then it's up. It's I think it's interesting. It's up for us to decide what we think of her, and what we either the things she did. Do we understand why she did the things she did? Were they justified? Did she go a little too far sometimes in a few instances? And it's for David to really make that determination as well. I really like the stuff with her as when she was deal the whole that whole scene when she has to deal with those three girls making who always or had always made fun of her, and then it's like the kid from the lacrosse team is trying to kiss her or something, and how that whole thing plays out. That was pretty vicious.
Huh. Yeah.
I mean, the more I thought about it, I'm not even getting into what how that ends up resolving itself, which is that's pretty bad. But think about it. How often do you have you how often do you see like something where we watch some kid basically beat the crap out of three girls? I mean, that's. I mean that was actually a little bit on the shocking side, and then the fact that he's going to go away, and he didn't even do it just because he was. Now, one could say, oh, he kind of sort of got his comeuppance because he was, he was sort of trying to force himself on her to a certain extent, calling her frigid and a bitch or whatever.
Plus, he was playing lacrosse instead of the vastly superior baseball.
Well, yeah, that goes without saying. Lacrosse, it's for that's for ladies. No, just I should not have said
Yeah,
that.
and John Bolton. I mean, Dennis.
Oh, and Dennis. Well, he doesn't listen to this podcast. Who cares?
No, but I'm hoping he does at some point, and then gets his mustache will start twitching a bit when I shit all over lame lacrosse, lame
Twitch.
cross. There you go.
Lame. Him and his John Bolton mustache. however. I think the one that's really the gut punch, and it's funny that and it's a story we already know, and yet it's still a massive gut punch thing, is what she does with her mother's boyfriend and how that plays out.
Yeah, that was not the most pleasant thing to watch, I'm not gonna lie. I don't tend to get, super uncomfortable by what I'm watching, but this definitely pushed me right up to that ledge.
I mean, everything about it is there's a certain unseemly nature to it from the get-go, of course. But if she had gotten away with it, if it had just happened, and then she switched back and no one was the wiser, it still would have been kind of creepy, but it would have been all right. That's interesting. But what ends up happening, which pretty much means this guy and one can presume is now going to prison as a child molester for probably a very long time. That was really screwed up. That was a really messed up moment. I mean, that was the one that left David reacting. I think that's the one where David was left kind of with a look on his face like, oh. Because I don't think that part of it was, and I could be wrong about this, I'd have to go back and watch. I don't know if she went that far in detail when she talked about doing this last season. And if
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's good. Yeah.
yeah, I don't remember that her actions led to a guy, because the guy is innocent, you know. He thought.
Yeah.
So that was among the many fun things that we got to see, you know. And then and we got a little song that if we were a more sophisticated podcast, we would have had clips of the episode. And we would have popped in the little "Poor Lost Elf Keeps to Herself" song or whatever. But we're not that sophisticated. I'm trying to. I'm like I'm scribbling through my notes. I'm reading my scribbles here to try to figure out. Oh, you know what I was doing? It was funny. My notes, which are not really legible. Apparently, I was trying to. I was basically David as I was taking my notes, because at every point I start writing my assumption of what this is all about, what it is that David needs. And I was like, oh, look, you should see the notes I have. It's like, it's not a real fire, so there isn't real warmth. You know, she can't feel warmth. She has no warm feelings. That's it. She has problems feeling, both literally and figuratively. And then I wrote next to it, wrong. Oh my God. One of the things I also loved about certain points in this episode were the fact that the points where it's not simply the typical you know, I always compare it to like, you know, A Christmas Carol, where you have a character walking around that no one can see, and that's been done a bazillion times on a million shows, whatever. But the fact is, on in this world, David seems to be able to interact whenever he wants to interact, or whether they see him or not see him, because there's no rules, I guess. So the part where he tries to talk to her at a younger age, I love that. He starts trying to do the whole lie, like, I'm a teacher here or whatever. I just love, and because like, you're cheating. You can't just ask me, you have to figure it out for yourself. I was going, okay, that's gold star for Noah or whoever, or I didn't actually look if he or someone else wrote the episode, but I really like that a lot. Yeah, and it's midway in the episode we do find out that we suddenly are back at Division Three, and we find out that's when we find out that the two of them have not woken up yet. Meanwhile, everyone else has woken up, and that's where we start to figure out, oh, this is now Sid's doing. She's keeping this going, you know, that she you know, it's her test, I guess, you know. And although hopefully I've grown past it now, I know in my life that I've either been the tester or the testee in relationships at a certain point. So it's not, it's sad, but it's not an uncommon thing for people to pull on each other, or at least people who are just a little bit or a lot of it screwed up. So the one, I think the only notable thing other than what happened at the very ending, as far as the little minor Division Three interlude before we get back into the Sid's childhood stuff, was a little bit of the Loudermilk. I like the Loudermilk moment between the two of them, and Carrie trying to pull Carrie out of her. And yeah, I know there's no way to talk about their situation without it sounding horrifically incestuous and bizarre. But I think they did that on purpose on the show, just to make it difficult to talk about. So yeah, I mean, by the end of it, there's also a lot of great lines that they pull out. I love, and that even are going to stay with me. There's a line she has, I think they even used it in the ads, I'm trying to see if I wrote it down anywhere, And oh, here it is. I did write it down. I liked her line about, "You think ghosts like living in a haunted house." I thought that was a really
Yeah.
well-crafted line, and her talking about herself there.
Yeah. Not a ton of dialogue this week, but they definitely got their mileage out of what they were using. Very effective.
Now, speaking of dialogue, did you like? Oh, well, maybe "like" is not the right word. Did you feel satisfied with the resolution to all this and what she said and what she ends up telling David? I was kind of, I was 50-50 on it. How did you take it?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to really. I mean, it's hard just to say, but I don't know if it was super necessary. I mean, it was definitely touching and kind of creepy and dark, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know if needing David to prove himself in some way for this matter just kind of seems like it maybe weakens Sid a little bit. I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why she would, at this point, she would still
Yeah.
feel the need to make David go through this. But I'll defend her, not defend her, that's not the right word. This starts out being the I believe this starts out being the mental prison situation that everyone else
You
had
think
been trapped in.
you think maybe like the idealized version of her past is like the maze?
That would make more sense to me. That would totally make more. I think that's
Yeah,
what it was, because
that
everyone,
kind of works. Yeah.
yeah. And then once she re and then she, well, let's put it this way. I think she decided to take advantage of the situation, and just, it's their version of like the guy and the girl. Like, they're doing perfectly well, but the guy's out of the room for a while, and his iPhone's just laying there. It's like, well, he's got a lot of texts. I wonder. I'm just gonna look at them, even though you shouldn't. But it's you're just wondering.
Yeah, I wouldn't blame Sid at all for being insecure after what she's been through and what she continues to go through. I mean, she like literally can't get, super close to somebody, well, physically anyway. So
Right.
I could imagine it must be, really difficult for somebody like that to feel secure ever.
And also, I think David not being fully f
Stable.
well, there's that. Although they've certainly, I feel like they certainly have played that down to a certain extent this season, even though
Yeah.
I'm waiting for it to rise again, because come on, he's not. But the fact that he has also was hedging more than a bit when she was asking questions about future Sid in that situation. So that I wonder if that also plays any part in her actions here. And lastly, and to use a phrase that you used about that opening part, I think it's also very clear that David tends to have this idealized version of her and their relationship for the most part. And while we certainly have seen at different points that she definitely loves him, I always love the way she refers to him. She's one of the few people on TV who can refer to her, her boyfriend, whatever, that way, and it seems perfectly natural. When she says, "That's my man," it works. You hear that on another show,
Yeah.
it would make you cringe. I'm like, what? Shut up.
Huh.
But I think she, maybe because, keep in mind, he's only been back for whatever X number of days now, but he was also, but he had been in her, as far as she's concerned, he had been gone for a year.
Right.
So in a way, and so he's coming back to her after a year, and she just wants to, like, I think it was her way of just like shaking things loose and going, okay, just to make it clear, this is who I am, and this is what I've been about my entire life. And that's when she I think she has the line like, "This isn't a fairy tale," and he says, "It is for me." And it's like, I think she has to disabuse him of that notion that, because her life is many things. It ain't no fairy tale. But And I also, I mean, it was, I don't know, I haven't called corny, but there is something nice about the her concept, her idea that saying that, you know, love isn't going to be what that saves them. That's what they're trying to save. I'm surprised I haven't heard that used before. It must have been. I just haven't seen the right TV show or movie.
Yeah.
It seems like some. How can that not have come up? But it, again, out of her mouth, it works. Another character, it might have come off a little corny or cheesier, but for her, I think it works pretty well.
Yeah. Did you notice like how towards the end it kind of seemed, you know, once they woke up, David like didn't return her smile. Like he's like maybe he's a little creeped out by what she did, possibly.
Yes, I think. I mean, while I don't know if that's going to last into the following episode or not, I think initially there has to be, because he, even with all the problems he had, he can certainly feel. And he should have lasting reactions to things, and
right.
That's some really dark shit she did, and it's one thing to have heard about it; it's another thing to actually see it, and see just where it went.
Yeah, thank God this isn't a Kurt Sutter show, because I think I'd be traumatized horribly if I had to see how the hell he fucking shot that scene.
Well, then they'd have to have like an epilogue of that guy like actually being in prison and being being raped constantly in the shower or something, so just to make it that much worse for us.
Whatever it takes to get some asses in there, yeah.
Right, and then they'd have to have Katie Sagal singing over or something. Imagine she was the one singing in the White Room. Anyway, I also like that they choose the song White Room, and then because. On almost every episode, there is a point where they use a lot of white space on this show. I've noticed, whether it be they do it here. They've done it before, and they've been doing it with like the narrated segments that we had in previous episodes that we didn't have this week. Every time I do that, and if I've said this in a previous podcast, I'm repeating myself. I apologize. It always reminds me, and I always think one of the inspirations for that. Is a classic Bugs Bunny cartoon. The one where he's constantly being drawn into different situations and the artist is screwing around with him. But a lot of it is just Bugs Bunny on a blank white space, i.e. like the canvas or eel or cell or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much it. I know this is one thing we haven't gotten to, which is a quick thing. But pretty much the entire episode is just running the gauntlet of Sid's test for David, and him understanding that her life has, how the damage and what she survived, has made her stronger. And it's more, she's more about wanting to make sure that they're warriors than, just lovers or something. I don't know. Uh-huh. It was fine. But then they wake up, and what is it? There's like alarm bells going off. The troops are all running around the circular corridors, whatever. And we end with seeing Lenny is in custody, and we get a little "I'm back," and all of a sudden, "Burning Down the House" starts to play. So that. Be the last thing we talk about here. What to make of this? Did the Shadow King give her another body, a body to use, and is she really totally? What's going on here? Do we have any speculation?
It certainly seems to be possible that's what happened. But I mean, it's such a goofy show; it's hard to be sure about these kind of concepts. But I guess we'll see. Well, trying to think of what the end game would be for that.
Well, it's something obviously she wants, because past few episodes when we saw her, either when she was talking to David or when she was talking directly to Farouk, she just wants to go back. She wants to, and that's where she suddenly has a touch of tragedy to her, because I'm like, oh, she's there. She's actually is actually there. Her mind, her soul, whatever you want to call it. She's still under sway, but she can't. She just wants to come back. And the way Farouk was kind of ignoring her last time, I'm kind of wondering what would have given such a change of heart to to allow her to come back or not. So either is it A, is there some reason or plan behind it, which would seem to be the more likely of the two, or did she somehow figure out a way to escape? But even so, it's the whole body, and this is where we get really like things are never super clear on Legion. So her original, it's the idea like okay, her actual body had was I think was destroyed, they say, which probably means which would imply it was probably cremated or whatever. I guess that would be my I'm assuming that. So the manifestation that we see of her is, I'm guessing, to use like goopy sci-fi talk, some sort of mental projection of her, I guess. I'm not really sure how to I don't know what to make of that. So to be back on Earth, would she have would have to create? I don't know. I'm not really clear on the rules here, and I got a feeling I'm never going to have an adequate explanation for that. Do you have any idea?
No, not really.
No, I didn't think so.
Nope.
All right.
I'm clueless.
No, well, next. Okay, so like I said, there wasn't really much more to this episode. Doesn't make it a bad one.
No.
I wish we could talk about every episode in like 30 to 40 minutes. That's awesome. We are definitely looking forward to next week's episode. I saw a couple clips. Looks pretty cool, as everyone does. We just a word of note to our legion of listeners. Yeah, really. That's a mighty small legion you got there. We are not sure if, yes.
She
Oh, Legion. Oh,
said.
that's even funnier than I think you intended it to be. Hey, man, I got my test back. I'm fine. Anyway,
Oh, good. I meant to ask you about that. Sweet.
do you like how we're both beginning and ending the podcast with the implication of, okay, none of us want to hear this. None of us want to hear anything about Scott's anything. Okay. What was I going to say? Oh, we are not 100% sure if we're going to be able to record a Legion podcast next week, because of demands on our time, and the two of us are going to be meeting up in a 3-4 day, whatever weekend thing, later that week. So this is what's gonna, there's one of two things that are gonna happen. Either A, will somehow be able to record the same night Legion airs. I'm gonna say that's in my mind that's a bit on the unlikely side, but it might happen, but I don't think it or what we're gonna do, which has been done, we've had to do it, and I've seen many other podcasts do this, so it's not an uncommon thing. We may have to double up and knock off two chapters at once the following week.
Yeah, I'm sure I've done that before too. It sounds familiar.
Oh, we've
With
oh, we
all the
absolutely have.
traveling I've done.
Yeah, we've absolutely done it before, and we used to have to do it all that superhero crap all the freaking time. But yeah, I think we've had to do it at least once or twice before, and that might not be so bad because, unlike this week where we have now recorded three podcasts, that week we've only got the one. So it's not like a huge demand of multiple nights or whatever. So we'll see. Anything's possible, but my money is on that we're probably going to do a double podcast the following week, which is fine because since we just released three podcasts in 1 week, it's okay if a week goes by that we don't release one. So it all works out. Okay. So, with all that said, if you enjoyed listening to this podcast, you'll probably enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. You can find us on Facebook as the Serious TV Drama Podcast. Like the page, join the page, join the conversation, or whatever the spiel usually is. You can also find us on iTunes the same way. Type in Serious TV Drama Podcast on iTunes. You can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us there. Heck, you can just type in Serious TV Drama Podcast on Google and find us God knows where. We seem to be in a bunch of different weird, wacky places, which I don't think ever counts against our actual download. So I like to think there's maybe hundreds of more people who listen to us and just don't have a place to vent about how much they don't like us. And finally, you can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. That's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. All right. It was nice getting back together with you, Daniel.
Yeah.
And I would say exactly a week from now, I will either be extremely drunk or be recovering from being extremely drunk and hanging out with you at the same time. So that would be kind of a unique situation for me. And you.
Yeah.
Good
Oh
morning.
yeah, a week from now I'll be drunk by this point, but hopefully not too
Yeah,
bad.
this is the point where I'm just starting to go out at this point, so
Huh.
may even happen tonight. Who knows? Anyway, like I said, guys, we'll either see you next week or the week after. In any case, thanks for listening and have a good night.
Yep, good night, everybody. Thank you.